We are back. Brentley and Burko with you. College Golf Talk has returned. We do apologize. It has been a couple of weeks, life, work, everything else in the way, but we are back to recap the 2 weeks we saw LaCosta for the NCAA Championship, some coaching moves, the portals open, golf's longest day, juggling chainsaws, but we're here to sort of button it all up.
You know, I've had two coffees already today, Burko. Still jet lagged after, I think I counted 16 days in California total, maybe 17, because I went a little bit early. We went to see some family, went to Disney, then went to LaCosta for 2 weeks, stayed a couple of days for the U.S. Women's Open. So I'm missing that weather. But
Well, you can tag me in because I'm flying out on this Wednesday back to California. Bel Air, Curtis Cup coverage begins Friday.
We're going to have to pay taxes here pretty soon. We're spending so much time in the Golden State. But no, apologies to everyone. The good thing, though, about us not being able to pod the last few weeks, and there were numerous texts where you texted me or I texted you and we're like, hey, let's just push this back a couple days. And we kept pushing it back, but people can see us on other mediums. They can follow us on social media. They got my writing. You've been on the tube. I've been on there a little bit. So people can still get their college golf fix, just not in this audio format.
That's all right. We're gonna rip through it. We're going to give everyone the thoughts of what we've seen. And we'll start with the ladies. Farrah O'Keefe went in as one of the favorites. Good chance to win the Annika. She's kind of elevated, in my estimation, a really good player, one of the best in college golf. But now you start saying she's a junior, every indication she's headed back. We could be looking at a two-year college run that could rival probably anyone not named Rose Zhang.
Yeah, and we've seen the Annika Award won back-to-back years by several players. I mean, you look at Maria Fassi, Rose won it two times in a row, I believe. And so Farrah could be one of those ones. But again, I go back to Darius Rucker, and to me, that was kind of the turning point for her. And yes, she didn't finish outside the top 10 all season, even going back to the fall. But to open how she did in that event, beat a field like that, and get her, I believe, second of four wins this spring, that just showed that she's a complete player. That shows that she can make the putts when she needs to, that had been her Achilles heel for years until, you know, going to that mallet and then switching to the prototype last summer, that whole story there that we've documented many times on this podcast. But if she's going to make putts, she's one of the best ball strikers. She hits it a long ways. I think the only thing left for her outside of the team accomplishments is, you know, knocking off that Augusta National Women's Amateur next spring. I think that'll be the last on her list of goals, and then she'll set off and turn professional next summer.
The journey to make match play, win a national championship. We'll get to Stanford in a moment. But for days, it was the pride of Ypsilanti, Michigan, Eastern Michigan, with the round of the day, the final day of stroke play. Then you win a match, and then you start saying, what a story. Still an amazing story to make it to the semis for a team 2 years ago ranked outside the top 200. We documented they have tremendous financial support. But you still have to find players to play. And I'll be darned if Josh Brewer hasn't done just that.
How about the people that were trying to rein on the potential Cinderella story? Like it was some just inconceivably like crooked operation going on there. I mean, the last time I checked, it's pretty good to invest almost $20 million into, you know, two golf programs, including a women's golf program in the MAC. To me, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's an alum, you know, the company Game Above, and they decided that they wanted Eastern Michigan to have two really elite golf programs. And you bring in a coach like Josh Brewer, who is considered one of the best recruiters in the country. And to be fair, yes, the Leovao twins spent considerable time this spring in California. but so did the team. They played 4 of 5 regular season events in the spring in the state of California. They played another one, I believe, in Colorado or Nevada. So they were on the West Coast a lot. It's really cold in Ypsilanti, Michigan, last time I checked. So, again, there's you can't take away this kind of run. This is right up there with what we saw on the men's side with Augusta. But Augusta was a top 10 team in the country. They were a small program, but they were ranked highly. Eastern Michigan was 27th going into the NCAA championship. So, again, it's not like they just paid to bring in 3 or 4 of the top 50 amateurs in the world. They had no one ranked outside the top 100. They had one girl who, it was funny when you guys on the broadcast put up the side-by-side between them and Stanford with their world amateur golf ranks. And you have Stanford with, 5 inside the top 17? And one of the girls in Eastern Michigan was ranked like 1600 something, and her first reaction was, "Wow, I'm ranked!" Like she thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And then the other girl who was going up against Mega had no idea who she was. So this was just an incredible story. I'm a little sad that we didn't see it follow all the way through, because that would have been, that would have been right up there in the biggest upsets in all of college sports, maybe sports in general. So, but they'll be back. They got to go into the portal a little bit and figure out how to replace the twins. But I have no doubt in my mind that, we're going to be seeing Eastern Michigan again on the national stage here, over the next few years to come.
Well, they ran into Stanford in the semis, as everyone has throughout the course of the season. That championship match, 1 versus 2, Stanford, USC. And Walker did not hesitate, the head coach for the Cardinals, saying this is the best team she had, 5 inside the top 20. You never say never. We will be hard-pressed, I believe, to find a collection 1 through 5 as good as this. It could happen next year, but you look at the 2 seniors and then the 2 sophomores and a junior. Like I said with Eastern Michigan, the pieces of the puzzle. This was the year with the dynamics and the personalities where it just kind of happened. And you thought for a little bit, because USC's got a really good team, just not good enough. I mean, 6 straight years, the number 1 seed for Stanford, match play, all 11, national title number 4. People can say what they want about the whole stroke play portion of the championship. And I'm jumping the gun. For the second time in 3 years, the top-ranked teams and the top seeds after stroke play won the national championship. I'll leave it at that. But the Cardinal, they're just better than everyone else. It's just that simple.
Have you seen what's going on with the College World Series and baseball? Only 4 of the top 8. Teams
you've
in the country
Troy,
made it, and
got,
yeah,
are people
you had Cal Poly make a run there. I mean, there were a ton of upsets. A ton of the hosts and the regionals got upset. So
UCLA, number 1 team in the country, didn't even make the regional final game.
Yeah, we have to stop feeling like we got to control outcomes to get the best teams all the way up until the top. I mean, we got it this year, and we're going to get it, handful of years, but then other years we're going to get number 11 versus number 7. And, I think in golf, there's probably fewer upsets than we see in some of those other sports, just because you're playing, over the course of 72 holes, you're going to get the best teams. Like we haven't gone back and actually crunched the numbers, but I would bet of the top, 8 seeds going into nationals in the match play era, I would bet you're in the maybe 70 to 80% of the time you get at least 6 or 7 of them. There's been years on the men's side where we've gotten all 8 of the best teams. I think it happened one year at Greyhawk where all the top 8 men's teams all made match play. So I think the bigger discussion is probably, how do you ensure that the best teams get through regionals? How do you reward regular season performance? I mean, I'm sure you have some ideas on that. Like, do you exempt the top six teams in the country after the after conference championships straight into nationals, or the top 12, and then you go regionals from there, or does everyone play? I mean, is it just in the spirit of the game just to, you know, have everyone play?
Oof. Let them play. You know, if you can't, and it happens, that it's part of performing. You know, if a number one seed or a top 10 team, i.e. the Oregon Ducks for the women, don't play, well, then you didn't make it.
Yeah, but sometimes you get, if you're like Oregon, you know, they were seventh, you know, a lot of times they've been in that. I think 2 years ago when they didn't make it, they were maybe the, actually they may have been the second overall seed. But if you're five or six in the country, you get sent three time zones west or three time zones east. I almost think like if everyone's going to play, maybe you let the number one seeds host. I mean, the hosting sites at some of these regionals have been pretty sketchy over the past handful of years. Like, I don't think that we've gone to the best courses. And I think some of the courses we've gone to have had conditioning issues. I mean, think about Texas A&M a couple years ago, which normally that's a championship test. But, you know, Bears Best, I mean, I don't want to call out too many courses, but I think we need to do a little bit better. If everyone's going to play, we need to go to courses that are, you know, championship quality to ensure that, you know, we don't have any issues. But
quick thought on that, because it's been brought up from time to time through the years. Oh, by the way, you're the number one seed you're hosting. Odds are they don't have a course available to them. You can't just all of a sudden, by the way, we need your course for 5 days.
Well, then you have a you know, an alternate or a second alternate. Maybe, I mean, I don't know how all that works, but I would think that, you know, some of your better teams, they all have campus courses. Like Stanford could host on a whim. Oklahoma State could host on a whim. Georgia could host on a whim. Yeah, there's a few teams that probably couldn't. Oregon could probably host on a whim if they do it at Emerald Valley. They probably wouldn't be able to host on a whim and do it at Eugene. But yeah, I mean, again, that's a great point. But then do you go back to, all right, you're one of the top six teams in the country. We'll see you at the NCAA championship. And then, you know, the rest of the 24 spots are, you know, filled out. Nope. And maybe you do fewer regionals. I think six regionals is way too much. And I know we're getting down the rabbit hole, but I would love to go back to four. I think six is just, there's way too much. And that would solve some of the variability and where you're sent too. If you have four sites and one's an East Coast, one's Midwest, one's, you know, West Coast, and then the other one is maybe Northeast or, you know, Pacific Northwest or whatever, or in Texas, then you can send teams more regionally and you could do it that way. But anyways.
But one quick thought on that.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on. You have four regionals, four divided by 37 and a half. So how you get in an even amount of teams to get 30 into the NCAAs.
Well, so six are exempt, right? So then you have 24 spots.
Oh, yeah, that's part of the exemption. Got it.
Yeah, yeah. So then, so you have the four regionals, what, divided by four, what's that? Is that six? So
six,
the top six, yeah, in each advance. I think that, or however you want to do it, you could do six regionals still and top four advance. I just know that even on the women's side, you know, there are people who want the top 12 teams exempt through. And then you're playing, you know, four regionals with, what's 18 divided by four? I don't think that
four,
divides,
four
right?
Four and a half. Yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Good so. Math.
or three we'll regionals spend, with the yeah. top six. Anyways.
We'll spend all summer trying to figure out maybe a better way to process
maybe,
that.
Maybe AI could solve our issues like they did for USC. How about that? Was that the most shocking revelation you thought with USC and Justin Silberstein using AI to do the pairings, to set lineups over the last 2 months of the season? Did that blow your mind?
Oh, it caught me off guard. You know, I get it. Justin's as smart as anyone. But can an AI just say, you know what? That person isn't 100%. Or I'm old school. Sometimes you just go with the gut.
Well, AI knows that because Justin's talking to it every night. He's telling them, you know, so-and-so, you know, ate something bad for dinner. They're not feeling well. You know, someone has a blister. But I thought it was interesting. I was talking to Ann Walker about it at Riviera, and she says, yeah, I had heard that. And I wondered what he was doing on the laptop. And, you know, obviously, I'm sure Ann knows the benefits of AI, but at the same time, I think she also knows, like, well, you know, I think sometimes it also comes down to just having five of the best 17 players in the world, and that gets it done. Because Justin shared with us too that third match between Jasmine Koo and Maya Ortengren. Justin had said if Ann had thrown out Mega, that would have increased the likelihood of Stanford winning that point by 30%. Like, it's amazing having that kind of knowledge just at the, you know, just on a, like, on command. But it didn't matter because Maya Ortengren went and beat her pretty handily anyway. So, again, AI is now, Claude's now 0-1 in the NCAA championship.
Quickly wrapping up at Riviera, Kiara Romero, low amateur at the U.S. Open. It was great to see so many familiar faces, names there playing well, making it to the weekend.
Yeah, and she's up to 18 points in LPGA Leap, and not quite there yet. But we know she's going to play the Curtis Cup. She's going to get 2 points for that. She's going to play in the Arnold Palmer Cup in Ireland in early July. So that's going to bring her to...
That gets her to 18, I believe. And then if she remains number one at the end of the summer, that's how she would get above 20. If I
actually, you know what? She's at 19 because 2 points, because she was low. She topped 25. So, well, she did better than that. But the 2 points there, and then 1 point for Curtis gets her to 17, and then 19 points, or sorry, 2 points for Curtis gets her to 18, and then one for Palmer Cup is 19. And she's going to have two more major starts. She's probably going to have a handful of LPGA starts as well. All she has to do is make one cut in a major or top 40 in a regular event. And she's got her LPGA card for the rest of this year and also all of next year. So, again,
it was a good run. we're going to see her again.
We said this, you know, we said this a few weeks ago on our last pod that it's like, you know, we've likely seen the last after they failed to get through regionals. And that's another argument, too. Do you have a separate individual championship? Do you exempt individuals based on rankings? I mean, kind of a crappy thing to not have the number one amateur in the world playing your championship when she didn't even play that poorly at that regionals.
Yeah. It happens.
Still finished
it
top happens. 10.
Life yeah. isn't fair. That's the women at La Costa. Now to the men, Preston Stout, Oklahoma State Cowboy. God, it seems like an eternity ago. I believe the 10th individual Oklahoma State player to win it all. 5 wins on the season. We said it ad nauseum on the broadcast and the podcast. If it wasn't for Jackson Koivin, Preston Stout likely would have had a clean sweep of all the Player of the Year award honors. But Preston's legit. You know, he's now, and there's a ton of history, maybe one of the top 5 or 10 best to ever play at Oklahoma State when you purely look at a collegiate and amateur record, not what they did when they turned pro. You know, likely a double-digit win kind of guy. He's got 8 now. It's tough to break the Mount Rushmore, but you win individually. You won last year as a team, 3 Big 12s in a row. He's checking a lot of boxes.
So going back even to like the Lindy Millers and those types, like top 10 for sure. Who would be on that Mount Rushmore? I mean, I know I'm putting both of us on the spot there, and we'll for sure miss somebody. But I think you have to.
Well,
put
I mean, I think Lindy
there.
Lindy's regarded, I believe, as the best.
Bratton was a 4-time All American.
Yeah, and you can say that about so many of them. But, you know, Charles Howell was only there a couple of years. Ricky, a couple of years. I would have to do some research before I just started throwing names. Do you put Plank in there because he won a tour event as an amateur?
Do you put Matt Wolf on there and what he did in just 2 years? I mean, in terms of most dominant single seasons in school history, that sophomore year by Wolf was pretty dang good.
Yeah.
We'll have to come back on that and maybe do something this summer where we do some Mount Rushmores of some of these top programs. I think that could be a fun little off season project.
But that Monday is what makes, in my opinion, the best day in college golf. The race for
some people want to get rid of that Monday. Yeah.
I'm trying to take the high road as we wrap up this spring. The 4-for-2 playoff, 5 holes, 20 players. I thought there was a strong prospect that would happen. It did. And 2 very ill-timed poor golf shots eliminated 2 teams pretty quickly because it was a bunch of pars, couple of others. And the 1 lone birdie by Grazerman, 18, and Stanford and Arizona move on. North Carolina and Tennessee doesn't. But I thought it was great TV. I thought it was drama, theater, call it what you want. And if they switch that Monday, they're cheating the golf fan from pure excitement.
Yeah, and that whole kind of area, and, you know, I've had, you know, some other coaches and parents and stuff say the same thing. But if you could get to La Costa and you're there on a Monday and you have a playoff, you have teams coming down the stretch to make the 8 before that, maybe a closer individual championship race, which we got, but it was different because William Jennings was finishing on the front 9, which is what, a mile and a half away from the 18th green, maybe about 2 miles. And so Stout and him really were not, Stout finished and then had to wait for Jennings. So we didn't really get that. But if you're sitting on that practice green and it's kind of raised above right by the first tee, you can see every one of those greens that they played in that playoff. To me, like, I was right in the middle of that. And even going back to, you know, I was on the front 9 when Carson Bertagnoli from North Carolina had to birdie and hits just a great flighted shot from, I think he was in the first cut of rough right through the fairway, you know, right to 7 or 8 feet and just pours it in. Like, that stuff is awesome. But, you know, just to then drive over, you know, be around that, get to see all of, you know, everything going on. You don't really know what's going on, although I have you and the broadcast in my ear at the same time. It's just there's nothing like it, and again, a lot of good, but a lot of bad as well. And that little montage of those 2 shots with Andrew Riley chunking one about halfway into the pond on 16, and then Josh Hill hitting just a cold top that looks like a shot that, you know, that I would hit when I'm trying to, you know, find the fairway. That will forever live rent free in my head. You know, for the next 10 or 20 years. I mean, that was so wild. And I keep thinking, if you're North Carolina, and I think we can, you know, criticize decisions for sure, because we also give praise when it's due. But Andrew Riley was by far your worst player for the 4 rounds. Probably your worst ball striker. You need to put Carson Bertagnoli on the 16th hole. I mean, if you need a guy who's going to hit an 8-iron to that tuck left pen, or at least you just want him to find dry land and hit the green and 2-putt for a par, like, you need to put Carson in that. And then you have Andrew Riley play the first hole or 15. I didn't get that decision. But again, you probably don't know that that 5 pars is going to get it done.
Yeah, and we had that discussion off air. If you're truly struggling, not playing poor, you know, the best, I'm going to go the opposite way. Hit an 8-iron airborne, 150.
Or how about this strategy? I would assume that your sub could sub in for the playoff.
Yep, they can. It's the end of a round.
I would have been having Keaton Vaux on the range, hitting that shot over and over and over and over again, and then I would have put him in. And yeah, I mean, that maybe a coach listening to this will, if they find themselves in that situation and they kind of have a, you know, only a 4-man lineup. Yeah, maybe they'll do that. That's what I would have done. I just thought of that. I would have definitely put Kamen in there and just had him practice that shot for about 10 minutes.
Wrap up with the men. Auburn wins for the second time in 3 years. Jackson Koivun, one of the great runs we've seen in college golf. Every indication is the run will be over. He's got his card locked up. He's had it locked up. Credit to Nick Kleinert. Couple of new faces, you lean on people that have been there, and as we found out, he believed the team that didn't win last year was the best he's ever had. So yeah, it happens. Auburn's good, but you know, more importantly, to be treated you know, by Koivun, because you think about it, when they won, I want to say it was in the quarters against Stanford, Koivun lost his match. Yep. And I said it on the air, like, and I said it with you, you know, our wrap of the day on Golf Central. Auburn's proved they're more than just Jackson Koivun. And maybe on the surface you don't see it, but then Logan Riley and others certainly showed the world.
Yeah, I'm looking ahead to next fall already, and you think about what some of these teams are losing, and if Auburn does lose Jackson Koivun, it'll certainly be a big hit. I think Oklahoma State's probably still got to be number one, considering that they're bringing everyone back again. But Auburn's not, like, the cabinet is not bare. Josiah Gilbert's probably going to be a top five player in the country next year, just if he keeps progressing like he has been and dials in a little bit of the inconsistencies. And those two freshmen, Logan Riley was the top-ranked player coming in, and in our recruiting rankings, Jake Albert had a great year. I think Nick said he's the second best putter on the team.
Good memory.
If that serves me correctly, both those guys went 3-0, and Auburn only lost 2 points. Like Stanford, that was kind of the talk on the women's side. Can Stanford go 15-0? They ended up going 14-1. Auburn, I believe, went 13-2. And Koivun lost one of those matches. So. Again, just a total team effort. I do agree that last year's team was probably better on paper. But I don't know. I think we could be looking back in 2 or 3 years and, you know, could say, like, you know, some of these guys, Josiah Gilbert, Caden Pope, just kind of the consummate, just lunch pail guy, just leader on the team, I think keeps everything loose. Like, to me, and being around that team, he's the glue. Koivun gets all the headlines and he sets the standard by how hard he works and all the hours he puts in. But to me, Caden Pope and Josiah Gilbert are the two glues of that team, just keeping them together and stuff. And I mean, Billy Davis could start for most teams too, and he was the sub and didn't even see any action. So to me, Auburn was the best team coming in, and hey, we went 2-for-2 with these best teams. But UCLA too, I mean, you can't overstate what they did and the job that Armin Kirikosian, I thought he probably should have got maybe a closer look at coach of the year, but to go from under 500 to winning another Big Ten title, to getting through that playoff, to making it to the final match, and nothing against the players on the team, but to do it with those players where Baylor Larrabee is your highest ranked guy in the 60s of the World Amateur Golf Ranking, like, to me, that's just an incredible finish to the season. And it was good getting to spend a little bit more time with Armin and get to know him more. And you know, I'll tell you what, I think a lot of people are looking at that and saying, I kind of want to play with this guy. He's just very, very calm, like very, very fearless, like just has a quiet confidence about him. And I think UCLA is going to I think that program's going to continue to keep rising back to where we saw it, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Some other new faces in new places come the fall, as we all sort of knew. Ryan Hibble leaving Oklahoma, going to Georgia Tech. Sooners replace him with Jonathan Moore, who was the associate head coach there in Norman. John Paul Hebert leaves UNLV. He heads to Baylor. The Rebels replace Hebert with Andres Gonzalez, former standout for them back in the day. Thomas Sutton heading to the Washington Huskies. The Cougars of Houston, Oregon State, still open. Coaches stepping down. And then the women, I think we were all caught off guard a little bit. Lydia Lasprilla from those Houston Cougars headed to Alabama, and some big names that we thought were going, thought otherwise. But, you know, Hibble's the one that stands out to me. You and I spent a lot of time with him, talked family, both from Georgia. He's like, I'm a builder. I'm excited. I'm ready. But the thing he told me, and maybe I shared at some point, he was going to Georgia Tech. And he told his parents that, and they said sleep on it. And then Athens came late. And he said, I love everything about Georgia Tech, the academics, the golf, the history. But he's got work to do. You know, Bruce Hepler did a great job for 30 plus years. Puggy Blackman before him. I'll be curious how it all sort of unfolds in the, you know, coming years, because I don't think it's a 1 year I got what I want. It'll take some time.
Yeah, and his wife is going to Georgia too, or his now wife. So I think that was probably the thing that put the Bulldogs over the edge, getting Hibble there as a kid coming out of high school. But yeah, he shared, you know, very similar with me. I think it's interesting. A lot of his friends growing up are big Georgia Tech donors and alum. And so he's kind of maybe been Georgia Tech adjacent all these years, and we just never really thought about it. And, you know, there was a lot of, a lot of noise that was going on right when this was announced about Oklahoma cutting his salary and cutting back his budget and all that. And, you know, he said point blank, and he would have told us, even if it was off the record, that if that was true. And he said that was absolutely not the case. They did everything they could to keep me. Coming from me, I think that when you Georgia Tech was offering a good bit of money, right? It's the chance to go home, to be closer to family. And I do think that, you know, Georgia's disinterest and bringing him back, I think that was maybe just a little bit more fuel to make that, you know, and just have him say, well, you don't want me, like, you know, they do. And Bruce Hepler's made it known, like, Bruce Hepler's been saving a lot too. He's just been, you know, flipping those gold coins into the vault all these years. So he's left Georgia Tech in a really great spot. And when you think about not just the athletic prowess of that program over the years, maybe not team-wise, but certainly individually with all the NCAA and U.S. amateur champions from Kuchar to Mulder to Ogletree, Strafacci, those guys, it's also really great academically. And that's going to be – and then you add perhaps the best coach in the country. I don't think it's going to take that long. He's already made a little bit of noise in the portal. This next recruiting class, I think, is going to be huge. So I wouldn't be shocked to see maybe in year two Georgia Tech be in match play, and, you know, maybe we're having breakfast with him on the morning before the championship. So huge hire, huge news, shocking news, but it's something we're going to have to get used to seeing him in navy and white.
Portal's open. Couple of notables sticking out to you.
Yeah, so the big one was Winnon Min, the Oregon State freshman who was top 30 in the country this year, despite missing most of the spring, kind of playing internationally and trying to get, you know, everything in line, getting into school. But John Rehorn going to caddy for Joel Damon on the PGA Tour, I think that was the key to Win saying, you know, I want to go in the portal, and he ends up at Arizona State fairly quickly. But I do think that Min, he relies a lot on John. I think he has a really close relationship with John, and John was Thurman's assistant at Washington and is a close friend. And I think John was like, hey, like, I think you would do really well here. Thurman actually is the one who first kind of found Min and said, you know, he's probably not good enough right now to play for me, but John, I think he would be perfect for your program. And so that's how he ended up at Oregon State in the first place. But I think this was just a no-brainer. But anytime you can get, you know, someone who's a top 50 amateur in the world and is probably going to be better, was runner-up at the U.S. Junior last year, I mean, that's going to be huge for that Arizona State program. Just kind of scrolling through the list, I mentioned Georgia Tech getting kind of stud out of Richmond, Carson Baez. I think he could be, you know, maybe a little bit sneaky there. Some other stuff that stands out, Sean Keeling never really got it going at Texas Tech. He made a run at a U.S. Junior a couple years ago out of Ireland. He's going to get a fresh start in Louisville. And then on the men's side, guys who are still in the portal who are looking, the biggest name is probably Cooper Clakeham from Louisville. From what I've heard, he's got a lot of big schools in that Southeast vying for him. He's going to take a few visits, so we'll see where he ends up. And then on the women's side, some really good, maybe lower power four, group of four players. Luis DePot going to Oklahoma State from Tarleton State. She's been by far their best player the last 2 years at Tarleton. Sophie Elstad from Oklahoma State to Baylor. That's another one that stands out.
Did you mention Jackson Bird on the men?
I didn't mention Jackson Bird, but yeah, I mean, that's huge too. But again, like, Jackson Bird didn't do anything as a freshman at Clemson. So that could be the ultimate wild card. I mean, a guy who's a top five.
I think he ended up redshirting, right? Didn't it, injury?
Yeah, he had a back issue. I think he ended up redshirting only because he didn't play enough events. So it was kind of like, oh, we'll just take a redshirt. But I think the game had tailed off too a little bit. But yeah, that could be the ultimate wild card for the Georgia Bulldogs in year one under Mookie DeMoss. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I think Isla McDonald O'Brien going from ASU to Texas was probably the biggest headliner, biggest shocker on the women's side. But Cameron Jordan at Golf League's doing a great job kind of compiling all these and listing them. That's what I'm kind of looking at. They're all listed in alphabetical order, so it's kind of hard to tell rankings wise, you know, who's a big get and who quite isn't. But I do like the fact that the portal opened up later after the NCAAs this year. So you didn't have the situation that we saw with Georgia Southern last year, where they get through and all of a sudden they're at La Costa and half their team is in the portal already. And you have players on, you know, a player on the team that won who already knows where she's going. And then it's announced, you know, basically less than 12 hours after, you know, after they win. So, I like it being a little bit later, and, we'll have to see who ends up, in at a new place over this next few days or so.
And then we're going to wrap it up. Golf longest day. You were a big part of it down there in South Florida. And no surprise, handful of college kids from all around the country. They got to head to Shinnecock. They better get going.
Yeah, I'll just rattle these off real quick. The Ballground Georgia site, Chase Kai is the rising sophomore at Tennessee, who, when he was talking to Lav, and Lav told him that the U.S. Open was next week, Chase Kies didn't even know. He's like, I wasn't aware that it was next week. And I think that's very on brand for Chase. He was a top junior, was going to go to Alabama, switched at the last second, and became a Vol. So, you know, he's certainly one to watch. At the Ballin Isles in Palm Beach, the one I was at, you know, not only did we get the top two players in the class of 27 with Miles Russell, with Charlie on the bag, and then Giuseppe Puebla, who's the second-ranked player in the AJGA rankings, they got through, but also Ryder Cowan, a rising senior, reigning top 10 Haskins finalist. Ben James still playing this week as an amateur, then he'll turn pro next week at the Traveler, or 2 weeks at the Travelers on a sponsor exemption. Jackson Orman, who's an incoming freshman at Florida, got off to a really slow start and then just blew the doors off. He shot 63 in that second round. Then he's leading the AJGA event right now. So a lot of golf for the young kid. Logan Riley, we talked about him at Auburn. He gets through from Rockville. No amateurs in Springfield. Couple amateurs, Von Harbor, I believe he plays at Ohio State. And then Arne Svensson is going to become the first player from Iceland to compete in the U.S. Open. They get through out of Westerville, Ohio. No AMs at the Canada site. That is, mostly PGA Tour players playing the RBC Canadian Open this week. And then a few at Del Paso Country Club. Merrick Fleming, South Carolina guy. Matthew Robles. And then Eric Lee. Going to be a first major start for him. Oklahoma State Sooner. Going to join Preston Stout and Ethan Fang. So they're going to get three of their five starters. And that's it. That's all for the college players that we'll see at Shinnecock. And I say that's it. That was actually quite a few. But who out of those names, who would you tab as potential for low AM? Not counting Jackson Koivin and Stout and those guys.
Okay, because I would say I'll take Ben James. Give me Robbie Logan Arnie. Riley.
Logan
yeah,
Riley.
Give me Logan Riley. Big moments, big spots, clinched for the Tigers. Why not? See if it can happen. Heck of a run, my friend. Another college season in the books. We're not saying we might not pop up sometime during the summer. Life gets in the way.
We're not trending.
No. Odds are we'll see ya. When I get back from La Hinch in the Walker Cup there in early September. But I've lost count 4 or 5 years, maybe a couple hundred episodes. We have fun, and I think people like us.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. I think most people do. Who knows? There might be some people who hate us. And that's
that means you're doing your job well. You want half of them to like you and half not to. Enjoy the summer. Our paths will cross, no doubt. Make sure you get some quality family time. And most importantly, thanks to everyone each and every week or every few weeks when we get a little tardy for listening to College Golf Talk. We have a blast, and all kidding aside, we do have a handful of people that listen. That watch, and they say, you know what? We really enjoy it. So it's why we do
it. One guy bowed to us one time. Remember that?
I do.
Bowing. I'm like,
He'll get out more. He'll get out more.
Yeah. He'll get some better heroes here soon.
Yeah, correct. Raise the bar. You knocked it out of the park as always, and enjoy, and we'll see you out there down the road.